Hi everyone, and welcome to the TL Podcast. This is where you can learn, grow, and be inspired by some of the most influential leaders in their field. Because the first step to a better tomorrow is taking action today. I'm your host, Thomas Le Hoang, and thank you for tuning in.
Hi Thomas, how are you?
Excellent, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Just get the video starting as well. The system seems to be very slow this morning, but that's okay.
That's quite all right. Thank you so much for making it.
Yeah, well, hey, my pleasure. So what time is it for you now?
No, actually, I'm in Brussels right now.
Okay.
It's 10 o'clock, so it's not that bad. Except that I've got a bit of jet lag.
Yeah? Have you just flown over to Brussels?
Yes, I just arrived yesterday.
Oh, excellent.
And then there's been meeting with Australia, so that was up until 3 o'clock, and it was up again for some more work, you know?
Good man. So,
however, you are a very interesting man. And now I know, Manly Hopkinson, there's plenty of YouTube material about you. I think that the BT challenge, the yacht challenge is a big, big part of your life.
It is indeed.
Even though the precursor of that being in the Hong Kong police and maybe in the Navy, it's been the linchpin.
Yes, indeed.
And also maybe your father's upbringing and the principal man may have been the backbone. I really would like to talk to you about something for a small business guy.
Okay.
He runs a small business, mainly a real estate business, or maybe a lot of people who run a little shop and they have staff. And it's a funny thing because COVID has brought your compassionate studies out now, and everyone's writing about compassionate leadership now. And so I just would like to focus on this BT Challenge race, which is now probably replaced by the Clippers race, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's well known by Brendan Hall, who wrote Team Spirit, the Australian who's won with his
That's
team.
That's right.
Now, can we share a little bit about that race, maybe, and think about it into a small business, right?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Thank you so much for this, Manly. So we're not prepared. We're asking you this kind of question, and this is fantastic because we can see the man living the principles. So when you started the race, did you handpick the people, or you got given the people?
No, well, actually, that's a fundamental important aspect of the race, is actually I did not select my crew. And actually, I actually think, Thomas, that's the strength, because the danger is when we select people that we try to select people who make us feel comfortable. In other words, they're people like ourselves, because it's easy to relate to them. It's easy to communicate to them. But actually, that's not the power. The power is in our difference. And sometimes if we're just got a blank sheet of paper, we're selecting people, then all I do is pick little mini Manleys everywhere. I'm surrounding myself with little mini Manleys. And you know what? That would be a complete disaster. So the central organization selected the teams. They came from all walks of life, all over the world. My youngest was 21. The eldest was 62. Yeah. The actual upper age limit was 60, but he lied about his age and got away with it. And that was fine. And bearing in mind that this is the world's toughest yacht race, going round the world the wrong way, against the wind, against the current, 32,000 miles, 9 months, 8 of my crew had also never sailed before in their life.
No.
This isn't about sailing ability. This is about difference, diversity, inclusion. It's about attitude. It's about that mental sense of, yeah, I'm going to take on a challenge for whatever personal reason it might be. And then what the organizers did, and it was set up by an amazing Scotsman called Sir Che Blythe, was just to sort of create 12 equal teams based on age, sex, nationality, young ones, old ones, boys, girls, Aussies, Kiwis, Englishmen, whatever it may be. Then looked at just capability to make sure the teams are evenly spread. There had to be a doctor on the boat. One of the boats didn't have a doctor. They had a vet. But I guess it's the same principles, isn't it? And then off you go. You as a skipper then were given this group of people. But actually, I think that's more real. Because even if you're in a small business, even if you're setting up your own business, you invariably meet people through chance, through a recommendation, or you're expanding a business, you're taking on other people. And I think more often than not, the ability to just embrace the people you have or the people that are there is actually a strength, as opposed to trying to pre-select too closely, unless you're going to do it very consciously to make sure you do it with grabbing people who are different than you and fundamentally different. So, yeah, I didn't select my team. You then had the honor of taking this eclectic group of remarkable people, and they're normal folk. There was a student, there was a grandfather, a mother, a lawyer, a nurse, from all walks of life. And they were all there for different reasons. And I think this is also true, Thomas. When we have a small business, when we have a state agency or a shop or a small medium enterprise, whatever it may be, we have an idea of why we're there. We know what our motivation is. We know what it is that we're doing there. The danger is we then assume the same motivation for the people with us. And that's also a danger. So on my ship, for example, going around the world, I did have some people who wanted to sail, and I put this down as a big tick in their sailing CV, and they wanted to try and win. I had people who were quite literally just trying to escape from an awkward situation back at home and thinking, I'm going to need to get away for a while. There were others. I had a junior doctor who was just about to become a general practitioner out in the world, and she wanted to take a year off to learn how to communicate to people, how to build relationships, and everything in between. And so I think as a small business, don't worry so much about thinking I've got to pre-select just the exact sort of people. People will come. You may well inherit a group of people with a business. Most important thing, though, is to get to understand what their individual purpose is. Why are they here? Because it will be different from yours. And then respect that. And that's the compassionate part.
Yes.
Respect that difference and try and feed it. So, if, for example, Thomas, if you and I are on a boat together, you may be a highly competitive person and winning is everything. And for me, maybe competition's not so much. Maybe it's just doing something as a team is more important. So the important thing is that let's help each other. So I'm going to help you to win, and then you're going to help me be part of a strong team. And if we know each other's individual goals and purpose and motivations, and then we support them and feed them, then that's the essence of a really, really strong team and an excellent business, no matter where you apply it. So, yeah, it's a great principle of the race.
Okay, so you said a lot. So I'm going to try and dissect and stay with the stat, okay?
Okay.
In your race, you have 13 boats.
Yeah, yeah, there are 12 boats, sorry. That's
12,
right.
12 boats. But yeah. in real estate or in a small business, if I don't like you, if I don't make it with you, I can always join next door.
Hmm.
And so there is now this element. I mean, we'll talk a bit later on maybe about on your boat, you can't quit unless you want to swim back. But in a small business, a leader has to somehow woo the employee too, because, you know, maybe not at the beginning, because when they're learning to sell from you, they're learning a few things, but it's not really... It's not a life and death situation. If they don't like the organization here, they can join next door. So how would you make that difference?
And actually, the parallels are still very strong indeed, because you're quite right. You know, when you're mid-ocean, you can't get off the boat and join the one next door. Right. That is for sure. It's a long way to go. What did happen on the race, though, is that a lot of boats lost crew. In other words, people said, right, I've had enough. I'm leaving.
And
that creates a real problem, because then you've got to try and find some new crew. You've then got to integrate the new crew. You've got to induct them in. You've got to get them up to speed and up to skill. We were very proud that we didn't lose anybody in our race. Wow. We started with a total team of 27, and we finished with a total team of 27, the same people. And so the parallels are very similar. So it's a two-way concept. So let's say you're my boss, Thomas, and I work for you. And you've made a commitment to help me in my life because you're a compassionate leader. And the definition of compassion we use is the one of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, which is compassion is understanding with positive action. In other words, I understand you, Thomas. I'm going to drop my judgment, drop my own biases, and I'm going to feed what it is I hear from you to get your commitment. And so, but it's a two-way process. So if I'm working for you, then I need to make sure that I give you a commitment too. But if you're being compassionate to me, Thomas, so if you are understanding Manly and his journey, You're helping Manly's journey to be fed through your business, through your enterprise, then actually you've got my commitment. And if you've got my commitment, you've got my engagement, you've got my communication, you've got my collaboration, you've got my ownership, and ownership is accountability and innovation. You know what? I'm going to feel good too. So you've got my well-being and my happiness, and you get my performance. So the chances of me jumping ship to leave your business and go to the business next door is very, very small. Now, I know physically people couldn't leave the boat mid-ocean, but they most certainly could leave the boat as soon as they got into harbor. Nobody was tied in and shackled to the boat for the whole trip. And so it's the same with your business. You don't want to shackle people there. You don't want to make sure and force them to be there against their will, because their work will be poor. They'll be unhappy. They'll be compliant, not committed. So as a leader, if we can make sure we've gained that commitment from the people, then the chances of them leaping to the business next door are slim, and it decreases. And that's actually better for me as a business leader, because it costs. You know, if I'm working for you and I go to the person next door, not only have you lost my ability, you potentially lost some connections I've already made. I may have taken them with me. Yes. You've then got to find somebody else. There's a cost to that. So all these things are important. So it comes down to the same principle that I had to make sure on this trip around the world, this race around the world, that I was able to feed everybody's individual motivation so they can see their self-worth, their purpose through the journey with me. Now, if I'm now running a shop, if I'm running a business, an estate agency, if I'm running just a team, even in maybe it's a larger business, it doesn't really matter. I want the same philosophy. I want the same feeling. I want people to leave me because it's right for their career to leave me, or it's right for our business that they leave. I don't want people to leave me because they feel unhappy, dissatisfied, they feel compliant or angry or unmotivated. And the focus is exactly the same. And whether it's still a high-performing team we're trying to create, whether we're trying to sail around the world, go to the North Pole, run a business, it's still the principle of a high-performing team.
Okay. You also said that you had a doctor on every boat.
Yes.
Now, does that mean that in a small business, you have to be, the leader has to be a bit of a psychologist himself? Or because we can't, a small business can't afford to have a psychologist, right?
No, it's true. So the doctor we had was mainly there for physical things, for breaking stuff. Because like you imagine, it's quite a physical environment and looking after the people and making sure there was illness and a few cuts and stitching them up. As it happened, we were very fortunate. We didn't have any major breakages on board at all. A couple of broken arms, but nothing nasty.
Right.
And I'm saying that, but not in a glib way. The psychiatrist or the psychologist bit, I think every leader needs to be, because we're not there as a psychoanalyst. We're not there as a trained psychologist, lie down on the couch and tell me your problems. But we have a responsibility as a leader. And the responsibility we have is in understanding our people in the best way we possibly can. So I don't think that's a doctor's role. I'm not there to solve your problem. So, if you're working for me, Thomas, and you have your own issues in life, I can only help you to a certain degree as a leader. And I've got to be careful as a leader that the expression is, I don't take the monkey off your back and put it on mine. I can't take that away. But what I can do is be cognizant of your position, help as much as I can. And actually, in reality, what I would do is try and encourage you to get help if that was the right thing to do. So the doctor bit on our boat was a physical aspect.
Yeah.
The consciously trying to understand and do the best for your people is the leadership role, a large part of the leadership role for sure.
Yes, I understand. Now, you said also that there was a gentleman who was 62 who lied about his age. Now, in your book, Compassionate Leadership, there's, I think, an element that is very strong that is about culture.
Yes.
So how do you deal with this when you found out that, this man now has lied?
You know what? He didn't lie to me. and also, he was an extraordinary fellow. We called him the professor. He had a professor. He was a professor in mathematics, so the brain the size of a planet. hadn't done anything particularly physical in his life. He was a sailor, but we would say a fair weather sailor. But he was an extraordinary man, and he added enormous value. When I first met him, because I said I didn't select my team. It was at a big event in London when we first met. He was actually very hesitant about staying on board because he just looked at all the young crew around him and thought that he was going to be a liability. And I remember saying to him that first night, and I didn't realize how prophetic it would be what I said. And I said, no, Professor, I know that my team were going to need you because of your wisdom and your experience in life. And also he had a very calm manner about him. And I said, look, I know that the young people in my team will lean on you heavily on this race. What I didn't realize, Thomas, was how much I would need him. Because sometimes as a leader, who do you share with? We can't always be Mr. Motivator. We can't always be at the top of our game. No. There are times when we have angst, we have concerns. There are times when emotionally we might be drained. And who do we turn to? Sometimes as a leader, it can be a very lonely place because that's our team. And we put a barrier, emotional barrier between ourselves and our team, which was wrong. What was lovely with the professor was that he could spot if I was struggling. And I was 20 years his junior, 20 more years his junior.
Right.
But he would recognize in my face, my expression, my mannerism, that clearly Manley was struggling with something. And he would just quietly say, hey, Skipper, shall we just have a little chat and come up on the foredeck? And I used him a great deal and we helped each other through that journey. And I think that was a beautiful concept, even though, if you like, if people are thinking about, hang on, Manley, I'm a leader. I can't confide I've got problems with my team. I disagree with that fundamentally. We're all humans. I may well be the captain of the ship and the professor may be within my crew, but we're equal as humans. He's not going to take over my ship just because I'm sharing a bit of vulnerability with him. Yeah. In fact, it gives him greater strength in my ability to lead because he knows that I'm aware that I'm not perfect all the time and that I may get it wrong or that I have doubts or that I'm emotionally drained by something. And the mere fact that I can confide in him and he could confide in me strengthened our relationship. And it strengthened it not just as a human-to-human relationship, but it strengthened it as a skipper-to-crew relationship because he knew that he could absolutely trust his skipper, wouldn't go off the rails, he wouldn't go crazy, he wouldn't suddenly snap because there was an emotional intelligence and awareness. So the professor may well have lied about his age to join the ship, but he was an absolute rock on board. He really was. And that life experience is a beautiful thing to tap into. But then, Thomas, you know, it goes back. If you look at small businesses, how many people who are mid-50s who are thrown on the heap of unemployment because people say, hey, you're too old? Yeah. That is such a missed opportunity. Those people with a little bit of gray, or maybe less, have a world experience, life experience. And ideally what I want in my team, I want old and young together, feeding off each other, the old learning the new ways and the new learning the wisdom and the calm from the old. So, you know, and I had a complete mixed team. And now when I look at trying to create teams, I don't want a team of 30-year-old perfect humans, whatever they may be. I want this disparate, desperate, eclectic bunch of different ages, obviously, you know, male and female, without any doubt at all, different motivations, different backgrounds, different languages, because that is the strength. Absolutely.
But then you're really putting the onus onto the leader, that leadership is really not only a responsibility. You have to adapt to your people, not the other way around.
Absolutely right. You're right. That's a really good way to put it, Thomas, because it is a responsibility as a leader, right? And the way I look at it is, and I understood when I first met my team, what the first role of a leader is. And I do share this in my book too, that when my team first sort of came to me, I realized that actually they'd given me the ultimate gift. They've given me their time, their life. I mean, on the boat, they quite literally gave me the security of their life on the boat. But the people who work for you, yeah, so you're paying them. I mean, well done, but that's a transaction. But they've given you something more precious than you're giving them. You're giving them a few dollars. They are giving you a large chunk of their life. They'll never get those moments back, ever. And I reckon that a leader's role is to give a return on the investment made in you by your people. And you're thinking, well, hang on a second. I've got maybe 10, 20 people that work for me. I pay them well. I look after them. Why do I need to give them more? Because they've given you more than you're giving them. They've given you their life. And it isn't just a few hours a week either, is it? As we know from work, you know, 7 days, we're generally working 5 days a week, you know, sometimes even longer, sometimes more. Yeah. So I think if we can have an attitude as a leader that we have a responsibility to give a return on the investment that the people have made in me, regardless of the transaction of the money and the salary and stuff, this is about life. And I think we're in a really, really good place. And you spoke about that culture. Now, what does that mean as a culture? If I've got a leader who's actually trying to make sure that this works for me, if I've got a leader who tries to understand me, if I've got a leader who is vulnerable to me, is sharing the fact that they don't have all the answers, they don't have it all right all the time, then that puts that culture in a hugely safe, open space. And it defines how we're going to operate together in a lovely, lovely way. And it's relatively simple, but it's all around this concept of compassion. And that takes that awareness first, that consciousness. Powerful stuff, Thomas.
Thanks for listening to the TL Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more inspiration like this, don't forget to subscribe. We'll see you in the next one.